Welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name
and
is James.
Drew.
Oh, a little close there on the call-in.
Yeah, I thought I'd jump in there, just break it up a little bit, because It seems like we're always giving the same intro.
I like it.
Welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is
James.
And I'm
Drew.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. People said the same thing about our photos for our photos with the guests.
The thumbs up,
and I have my hands on my sides, and I just now it's
kind of funny. So I spent quite a few years in Asia, I guess, in and around ESL people, and for some reason the thumbs up was a really big thing, and I just totally picked it up, and I really like it.
Do you think American or Western thumbs up is the equivalent of the Asian peace sign?
Oh. I don't know. Is it that popular here? It definitely is wherever I am.
Yeah.
Because I like the thumbs up.
Yeah. Yeah, thumbs up. You make it popular.
I guess so.
Cool. Yeah. My week wasn't too crazy as far as like work and fun goes. Mm-hmm. Kept low key on the long weekend, which is nice. Just need some time off.
It's kind of interesting in the middle of summer. So we have a little bit of a lull with the tech scene and things happening, but a lot of cool stuff happening in personal life and, you know, maybe beach scenes or whatever. But the weather hasn't been all that great. It seems like it has been the past couple of days, hopefully, but I still feel like we're waiting for summer to start.
Yeah, and then it's like getting into August, so, you know, like waiting for it to start is kind of like, I think we can call it when summer's getting to a close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Scary.
Pretty scary.
Did you want to jump to
meetups around town? So we have a pretty interesting week coming up, even though it is kind of mid-August now, or going into mid-August. We still have a fairly good lineup, I think, this week. Monday, there is the GitHelp and Zero Tech meetup starting from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. This is definitely a show up, bring your laptop meetup. If you don't have a laptop, though, I think you could still show up and probably pair up with someone or talk about Git and talk about Zero Tech. But I think it's I've gone there. I've had things to talk about and brought them up. I think I had some bash scripts and I was like, you know, is this a good way to kind of source this out, or is this a good way to organize my bash scripts for spinning up a Docker cluster, something like that, using Docker Swarm.
And this is only for people that are super amazing at Git, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
No, it's for anybody. I think some of the people there are really amazing at Git. Like Adam knows it quite in depth. But not everybody's going to know it, and so it might be a place if you wanted some Git help.
Cool.
On the other hand, if you were super amazing at Git and you wanted somebody to talk about that with at your level, or even talk about different versioning systems, then this might be a good meetup for you.
Now we have some BrainStation stuff coming up, a lunch and learn.
We do. So this is actually the next day. That is on Tuesday the 9th. So we have BrainStation at 1110 Hamilton Street. So they've got a lunch and learn. This is a $20 per person lunch and learn. So if you're planning on going out to that, make sure to sign up and register before you do go out there. And this is with James Clift. He's the CEO over at Visual CV. It might be pretty interesting. I haven't been to any of the lunch and learns over at BrainStation, but I've definitely been to the venue a couple of times. It's really a nice place, and it's right in the heart of Yale Town, so pretty easy to get to.
Yeah, and it is $20 too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and another event on the same day at 5:30 is the Financial Technology Side of FinTech Meetup.
So this looks kind of interesting. I first clicked on this, and I was like, oh, this is only shown to members. I was like, this sounds really like something Charles should be involved in or be interested in.
That's true.
I signed up, and I was like, maybe I'll go to this, and guess who's running it?
Yeah, I just saw that, too. It's like, oh, there's the blue star, or the white star in the blue circle.
Yep. Yeah. So this is over at Voleo Inc., 12th floor, 1140 West Pender. I wouldn't worry too much about bringing a laptop to this, but definitely some interest in fintech and what's happening. Now, this is specifically talking about security, and that's a really interesting topic, I think. I don't find a lot of people who feel that comfortable saying, hey, guess what? Here's a good talk on security. Actually, let me retract what I just said. It's an in-depth intro to securities industry.
Oh, I see. So maybe not necessarily the implementation of security.
Right.
I see. Yeah,
I just thought securities, and I was like, security, it's all about security. Yeah. But I guess maybe not. This should be pretty fun as well. It does say a weekly in-depth introduction to the securities industry, as well as for people who are preparing to take the CSC. So this is a really interesting meetup. It looks like it's a brand new meetup, and it's going to be happening weekly. So it should be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And the intro to topics of the week from 5:30 to 6:15, there's Jeopardy. Tap into financial knowledge you already have. What? That sounds awesome. And then a questions period at the last 15 minutes. Looks like it's going to be a great, well-prepared, and very interesting meet up to attend.
Cool. And then we also have the Closure Hack Night.
Yeah, Vancouver Closure. So happening at 6 p.m. over at CodeCore. Bring your laptop. Be ready to hack on some Closure.
Sweet. Cool. And then also we have on Wednesday the Linux Desktop Meetup.
Absolutely. So this is over at Decentral, 436 West Pender. Bring a laptop to that. If you've got something running Linux, then that would be great. If you've had trouble getting something running Linux, then bring that and see if you can get some help. On the other hand, if you just want to talk about some different things happening in userland, then this would be your place.
Sweet.
4:30 to 6:30 p.m., by the way. And yeah, I'd definitely bring some sort of device.
Another BrainStation event at 6 p.m. This one's also $20. It's the Intro to Data Analytics Meetup.
Yeah, so this is, again, 1110 Hamilton Street. I would definitely bring a laptop to that. Any sort of workshop-y thing, I would bring a laptop to. I don't know if it explicitly says it on the meetup page. Does it, James?
I don't see it here. It
doesn't say bring your own laptop?
No.
Okay, so you might not actually need it, but I would definitely. Why?
Oh, sorry. All right, I'll correct myself. It says you must have a Gmail account and bring a laptop with Google Chrome installed.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So you need Google Chrome installed.
Yeah,
I wonder if Chromium will cut it.
I don't know.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I guess because of the way that they're doing data analytics, they probably do need something to do with Chrome.
Yeah.
So maybe extensions or just maybe they're going to be using Chrome tools.
Cool. Yeah, I know people collect a lot of data. Sometimes you don't know how to use it. This might be a good place to learn how to use that data.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Cool.
All right. So then actually Wednesday is really, it's going to be a tough night for me because there's a lot of things I really want to go to. This is one of them. The .NET User Group of BC. So this is quite a title, .NET User Group of BC. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to challenge them to see, do they have any of their meetups outside of Vancouver?
Mm.
So what makes it truly a BC meetup and not just a Vancouver meetup?
Well, maybe everyone from BC is coming here.
And maybe they do have it all over the place. I don't know.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. It's actually going to be one of the first meetups that I've seen at the BCIT downtown campus, which is 555 Seymour Street. It says here room 282, 284. So this is probably taking up two rooms. And it might be a pretty big meetup.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty cool. Here's the title of it. Microservices. Beyond the hype, opportunities, pitfalls, implement patterns.
I'm guessing they didn't have a long enough title.
Implement patterns.
Implement patterns.
Well, maybe that's just a new buzzword.
Did you see who the speaker was?
I did not. Oh, Robert Reffel. So you know this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. There also is a registration link on Eventbrite, so make sure you click that and register there as well.
Okay. And then we have the Van VR. So this is actually going to be a VR and AR social. Mm. It's over at Misty West, 554 East 15th Ave from 6 to 9. Don't worry about bringing a laptop. Just bring your wallet and be ready to order some beverages and have fun with the VR AR crew.
Cool.
Then here's another one. So we've had guests, Kenneth from Microsoft and Brian from Mozilla, both working on DevTools teams. And they're organizing the DevTools camp. So I went to the last one. That's where I met them. It was just awesome. Hands down, one of the best meetups that I've been to. I really loved it. Maybe it's just something that I really think is cool. I really, really like the idea of developers building tools for other developers. Mm-hmm. That's just, I don't know. I think that's the best area of tech to be in, to be honest. And I really like this.
I'm really sad I missed the last one because you talk it up like you constantly talk about how great it is. Uh-huh. And even if I didn't know Kenneth and Brian, I'd still go to this, which I am attending if I've already RSVP'd. Yes.
Awesome. And this is also, to add a little bit of icing onto that cake, it's at the Microsoft office, 725 Granville. So if you haven't been in there yet and you want to go and check it out and check out a really awesome meetup, then check out the DevTools camp at 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. Now, laptops. Would you bring a laptop? So last time I went, it was more of a presentation style. On the other hand, I'm the type of person, and you might hate me for this, but I'm always on my laptop during presentations. It's not that I'm not paying attention. I do look at the speaker. I try and engage and I ask questions, but I'm also taking notes and I'm looking up things that they say, opening up tabs and doing bookmarks so that I have things to reference when I leave the talk. Because guess what? Not all talks are recorded and you have a chance to see them again or give you notes. And usually it's weeks, if not at least days, before any of the speakers give their slides, post their slides anywhere in the meetup.
I would say some people might argue you're paying more attention because you're keeping notes, you're making bookmarks, you're making sure that you retain as much information as you can.
I hope so. I hope those people argue that for me.
Cool. All right.
Okay, and that's our Wednesday.
Yeah.
So Thursday, we also have a pretty awesome looking lineup. So starting out at 4:30 p.m. over at Decentral, we have the DDD, CQRS, and ES Practitioners Meetup. Mm-hmm. What's this all about, James?
So DDD, Domain Driven Design, CQRS, Command Query Responsibility, Segregation, ES, Event sourcing. So I was about to say event storming, which is something else.
I think it's both, event storming and event sourcing.
Yeah, it should be ES squared or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, this is a meetup that you can bring anyone from your company from, people that are working on a product or maybe working on a project of some kind.
Anyone in the tech area, right? I mean, yeah. If you're in QA, if you're in project management, you're a developer, it's probably fairly relevant to you. Although I would say that most likely people in, you know, product management and development would have a good time here.
Yeah. So you're basically coming. I've been to a bunch of these before. I haven't been one lately, although that's my bad. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I always take away from here is using domain language, which is really applicable across your entire company, whether you're hired yesterday or you're the senior that's been there since the start. Yeah. Speaking with domains, command query responsibility segregation, I haven't had a chance to implement really. I don't know if you have before, but event storming actually is something that I've been looking at for, I have this podcast in my queue that's about event storming and event sourcing in PHP.
Ooh, nice.
So I downloaded it just because of this meetup so I can talk about it more.
That's pretty cool. Eloquently. Yeah, we use it with some of our projects at work and hopefully with everything. We're kind of trying to. We've definitely done some event storming sessions that have been super helpful. Mm-hmm. And we try and really, I guess, hammer that out during, we go through the design phase. We have some sort of an event storming meeting that we usually schedule, and we try and get all the events down. We've actually really noticed that because we work somewhat mixed with hardware and software.
Right.
We've noticed huge bottlenecks in the hardware when it comes to doing these. We start doing this event storming session. We're like, oh, we just need to do this. And we start doing this event storming session, and we get to a place where all of a sudden we have all of these events tied around the hardware.
Is it just unknowns, like with the hardware?
No, not necessarily. Oftentimes it's knowns, but it's just, I guess, complexity that gets added when you add moving parts.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. But yeah. Definitely a fun meetup to go to. I would make sure to bring a laptop to this, though you don't necessarily have to. There's usually a fireside chat. There is an event storming session. And then there's even a chance to maybe bang out some code.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if you love Charles, then you're going to love the next meetup, Learn Data Science.
Yeah, so this is over at Bench, 717 West Pender Street. West Pender Street on the fourth floor from 6 to 8 p.m. That should be a lot of fun. Make sure to bring your laptop to this. It looks like it is going over some, it's Learn Data Science with Kaggle competitions.
Yeah, this one's called Predicting Check-ins.
Oh, yeah, that sounds really cool.
Yeah.
So I guess looking at some of the apps that use check-ins, this or maybe don't, but writing algorithms that would be able to predict check-ins. That's pretty cool.
The best place to check in.
Oh, the best place to check in. Nice. Yeah. Nice. All right. And then we have, this is a really cool one from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. over at Code Core, 142 West Hastings. No need to bring a laptop to this. This is Code Core Demo Day.
Yeah.
So they usually have a nice selection of beverages and pizza and also some great, great apps that you see some of the students developing coming out of these boot camps. So it'll be a really good, I think, if you're interested in what people are doing. Mm-hmm. At some of these boot camps, and you maybe have an idea, maybe you'd like to go to one yourself and you want to kind of assess what sort of level would I be at when I come out of this, then this would be something you could go and see and be pretty impressed, I think. If you're kind of on the bench as to whether you should hire someone coming out of the boot camp and want to see what sort of level they're at, then this would be a great chance to see what sort of stuff they can produce in a few weeks. I'm actually always really impressed with, I think this is it, with how much people can get done when they have an idea and no management in the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've been to this before, and I was really impressed as well with how much someone could get done with just not only learning a new skill, but having to work on something by themselves, essentially. I mean, I know there's a little bit of like back and forth maybe with some of their classmates or their teachers, but they're really isolated in the fact that they have to do this project on their own, right?
So this is a really interesting thing. Sometimes they will team up, and then that adds another dynamic, because I think working with somebody else can sometimes speed you up, but on the other hand, it can also really slow you down, just having that communication or differences in opinions. So getting over those types of things and really pulling it through and coming up with some of these projects. But yeah, sometimes it'll be solo projects or group projects as well. But definitely always a good time, so make sure to check that out. That's from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursday over at Code Core. Then there's this other one. We have the Pi Data Vancouver. You might call it Pi Data.
Pi Data?
Pi Data.
Yeah. Pi Data.
Pi Data Vancouver.
Yeah.
So this looks like this is more of a social event for the Pi Data crew and discussing things like data and Python. And this is going to be over at Per Se Social Corner, 891 Homer Street. So if you haven't been there, this is the, it used to be Subi's, and it got refurbished or taken down or new management, different place now. And it's the Per Se Social Corner. I've only been there once. It's actually right across the street from where I live. I've only been there once. I had the oven baked pizza.
Yeah, I guess.
The brick oven pizza.
Yeah, brick oven pizza.
And I thought it was okay. It was a little bit, in my opinion, overpriced and under delicious. And if you're comparing it with something like, what's the place in Yale Town that has the really awesome brick oven pizza?
Goldie's?
Nope. In Yale Town that has the really awesome brick oven pizza?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Parlor.
Parlor. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I really like that place. I think they have way better pizza. Just
yeah. Okay. Cool.
And that's it for our Thursday. So let's take a look at Friday. What do we have, James?
We have the Product Tank meetup, and this one's called Product Lunch.
Oh, okay, interesting. So it's called Product Tank.
Yeah.
I wonder what that's all about, the Product Tank. Oh,
product
it sounds
tank.
Like the Shark Tank, but with products, the Product Tank. So this is over on Granville Island. It doesn't say exactly where, just Granville Island. So I guess you'd want to meet, join the meetup.
Yeah.
And maybe make a comment. So I actually work on Granville Island. Our office is there. So maybe I'll try and attend this. It sounds like it would be pretty cool. So there's going to be lunches and coffees. It's kind of informal meeting to talk product with fellow product managers. Wow. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely cool.
I was being a little bit sarcastic. I don't like a lot of stuff product managers talk about, and I wish they would just write some code most of the time.
Yeah, maybe this is a hidden meetup for product managers to talk about code.
Maybe it is. That would be awesome.
This is informal. Who knows? Yeah.
All right, and then we have this is pretty interesting sounding, and it sounds kind of non-technical because it says the Non-Technical Entrepreneurs and Networking Vancouver chapter. But it does look pretty interesting if you actually check out his page. So this is over at CodeCore Friday night from 6 to, I think, 8 p.m.
Yep.
And it's kind of neat. It's like Prototyping 101 for Startups Workshop. So a workshop-style session for prototyping skills. And I think that would be really good regardless of what level you're at, even if you are somewhat technical and it says non-technical, I don't think that's a don't show up if you are technical. I think that's more if you're not technical and maybe you're maybe a manager or you have an idea, you're more of a business developer,
sure,
but you want to have an idea of how to really prototype something, then don't worry about your lack in technical skills. You could still show up to this. And it looks like some pretty interesting sponsors as well, like Small Business BC, Spacecraft, Protohack, Proto.io, and Tangent.
It also does say to bring your laptop if you want to follow along. So that's important as well. And it is free.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like to see free stuff where you have to bring your laptop to follow along. Sounds cool. Like a really good time. 6 to 8 on Friday over at CodeCore. And there's still more coming up on Saturday.
All right. Then we have the Unity 5 meetup. Or I guess it's just the Unity meetup.
So this is something I've been seeing more and more of lately. Unity. I saw something, I think it's not this week, but it'll be next week or the week after. There's like a 12-hour Unity all-day workshop for like $150 or something. It looks really awesome. But then I looked at this Unity Roadshow, and I think this is actually from Unity People, maybe, because it's right after this. This is from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. on Saturday. Then right after that, if you are a Unity professional, or if you've got just some really mad Unity chops and you want to certify yourself, then you can take the Unity certification after this.
Oh.
But check this out. This is the Unity Roadshow, Creating Multiplayer Unity Games. This is a workshop from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. So it's a $20 ticket in advance, but you get, when you show up, you get $19.99 back.
Yeah,
so
I saw
it's a
that.
1 cent ticketed event. But you have to actually show up. I really like this idea. This is, hey, we're going to have a really awesome event and it's going to be free. But you know what? If you're just going to sign up and take a seat that somebody else could have used and not show up, we're going to charge you $20 to do so.
They're calling it a no-show fee,
which
I like.
That's really cool.
That's cool.
I really like this. So this seems really awesome. It's a great free event and it's cool. Unity. Who wouldn't want to learn that?
Have you used Unity before?
I've just messed around with it a little bit, like installed it and gone through, you know, the first like half a page of a tutorial.
Put a box on a page.
Yeah, exactly. So
I used it in college a little bit. It's fun.
Yeah. I think this would definitely be worth going to, although we usually have the podcast at that time.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Looks like it should be a pretty fun week, though. Anyway, that's our meetups around town. And we're here with our special guest, Adam Dimitrik of AdaptTech Solutions. Thank you very much for joining us today, Adam.
Thanks, guys. Nice to be here. nice that someone...
People, please.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yes. Thank you, people.
I think probably everyone probably thinks that we made you up because we keep talking about you and then never talked to you or have talked about Adam, and then now you're finally here at episode 38.
Yeah, it looked like some kind of a front
before.
Yeah, I'm actually someone that exists.
Code name for open source and fun. So, Adam, let's talk a little bit about your interests in software development. You grew up in Vancouver.
Yes.
Originally from Poland.
Yeah.
Sweet. And grew up in Vancouver. You went to King George.
Yeah. Lloyd Roberts and King George. A lot of immigrants ended up in that area in the 80s. So yes. I'm an 80s kid, immigrant kid in Vancouver. And
downtown, like, West Side?
Yeah, the West End. Like any nerd, I got into computers pretty early on a Commodore 64. Mm-hmm. And that's
how
it all started.
What were you using as your monitor?
A TV. I actually didn't have a disk drive or a tape drive because we were too poor.
For a tape drive.
Yeah, exactly. So I used to write down my programs on a piece of paper. When it was time to go to sleep, I'd mm-hmm. turn off the computer. And after school the next day, take out that piece of paper and rewrite to where I got to.
That's really interesting. So you couldn't actually save your programs to disk?
Correct. Yes. Because tape drive and all those things were pretty costly back then.
And there was no hard drive in the...
Well, take adjust for inflation. A Commodore 64 was about $350 back in 1984 or something like that. Mm-hmm. In today's dollars, that would be more around $800.
So that's interesting because back in 1984, I think $50,000 a year would have been a good salary.
It would have been an excellent salary. Right. But we didn't have that luxury. So anyway, it was a while since, for me, maybe a year before I could get some sort of storage format. And I got my first disk drive about a year after, you know, struggling like that. And then things kind of went a lot faster, kind of high altitude training for the first year, just basic programming. Mm-hmm. And discovered in attempting to write video games that basic is very slow and you don't get very good video games using that. So the passion for video games forced me to learn machine language by grade 7, which was awesome because then I could actually do some pretty neat things.
Nice. And just to get some context, so machine language for 7th graders was pretty common at the time, I believe, right? That was
Everyone was doing. You weren't cool if you weren't doing machine language on your Commodore 64 after school.
Dice, jacks, and machine learning. Yeah.
Machine now, was this before or after neon spandex?
Not sure. unlike in your school, Drew, we weren't wearing that in West End.
Yeah. I guess that was a North Bend thing.
Anyway, long story short, continued with that in post-secondary, did as many courses as I could in comp sci, and since that was fun for me, and like math and physics and those things. Continued on and just started consulting at the end of high school, really, and never really switched from consulting until a few permanent jobs here and there, but was consulting the whole time, really.
We've done a lot of different things. You've even spent some time teaching at Langara, I think, as well, I've seen on your resume, and of course we...
I could only do 1 year of that. It's just a lot of... it's not the type of teaching I found that I liked, so I kind of I like teaching more to people that want to learn something specific and something that I know instead of following a curriculum and then filing grades, etc. Mm-hmm. It definitely didn't fit how I like to quote unquote teach, especially with in this field. A lot of it is hands on, and you have to explore areas that are of interest or that you are weak in and want to get stronger in. And so these prescriptive curriculums and certifications are something that I'm not a big fan of, mm-hmm. although I've done some of them in my day.
It's very much a different sort of field. James and I were actually just discussing something about, you know, with a lot of different industries, you might have certifications. And I think I said something to him like, well, if you show up at a job and say, hey, I'm a certified Ruby developer, you're still going to have to write some Ruby or show something show that you can develop. Having a certification doesn't necessarily, or does it, mean much in this industry?
We see them a lot in IT, right? All these like Cisco things, IBM things.
It's something to make sure that you have all of the different corners of that specific aspect addressed and understood to a certain level. But like with most things that are overarching, you don't get enough of a deep dive. And it may be enough of a deep dive if a company has standardized on some level. I think these days for most line of business things, patterns and other things that come out, certifications just can't do justice. It's more like a craftsmanship. You know, there's different carpenters that can be have certain skills with a certain type of wood or a certain type of instruments, and where you have your 10,000 hours of flight time, so to speak, is where you're going to shine. So the technology field is so huge, you just have to pick some things that interest you and that kind of thing. And even if they're wrong, even if you make the wrong choices, that's still okay, because you learn quite a lot. And I learned this from Peter Hingens, who's the author of Zero MQ. I had an interview with him a little bit, I think a month ago, and he said that, you know, follow your passions, even if you're doing something that's in the end fruitless or pointless or just not at the right time, the industry's not ready for it. That journey is yours and it's unique to you. And through that journey, you've learned aspects of certain things that no one else knows. And that can be an incredible advantage. So keep, you know, doing what you're passionate about and don't let anything distract you, even if it's going to take you a little bit longer to find the right spot to work at or whatever. You are going to have an advantage over not doing that by being true to what motivates you. And you're going to get a lot further, even if the final product is not something that's directly usable.
Well, I think one of the things that I always think about with people like that are masters and they stick with something for so long that they just become the penultimate version of that type of developer are these I think the only millionaire employees, developers that I've heard of are the ones that work at banks that work on these super old systems. There's like seven people who know this entire system that runs thousands and thousands of or hundreds of thousands, millions of accounts. And there's like seven people in a room and the bus factor is like seven. Yeah. Some people die, the whole thing is gone. And these people are millionaires because they're the specialists.
Yeah,
people.
So there's definitely different spectrums on sticking to something.
Yeah.
I think you're looking at a slightly different angle. I'm kind of going after the people that are doing new things. I brought up Peter before, but he started things like EdgeNet and things that we're just not ready for in the IoT space, for example. But through that work, it's given him a tremendous amount of insight on distributed programming, mesh networks, and things like this that he just wouldn't be able to get if he did things in what would be an employable skill anywhere else. So,
right. So it's super hard to predict the future, and I think maybe, I don't know, more so with tech than with other things, but with everything, it's pretty hard to predict anyway. But if you were to say over the next 10 years or 15 years, 20 years, if you wanted to invest into learning some sort of technologies or go down some of these maybe interesting rabbit holes that nobody else is going to go down that might end up being fruitful or fruitless, what would be some predictions about what might be the former or the latter?
That's kind of interesting. I saw an advertisement by Pluralsight, which was getting some of a clickbaity article out there that you will need to relearn all of your skills every 2 years. Well, obviously they're in a business of providing materials for you to learn things. So of course they're going to be promoting
that.
And it's kind of interesting, the comments and the reactions by some of the more senior people. They said, go back to basics. That's absolutely not true. And, with the different frameworks that we get out there, especially around MVC these days and anything JavaScript, that's absolutely true. Every year or every 2 years, it's an entirely different landscape. Mm-hmm. And so how do you, how do you even say that you're going to have any relevant experience? So the one of the reasons I started another type of a hashtag that's hopefully going to go a little bit viral at some point is Zero Tech, is basically going through and doing the harder work, not using frameworks, tools, or libraries, to take advantage of the power of the languages and platforms themselves that are out there. And, for example, a CI/CD framework or approach may include something like Jenkins or TeamCity or whatever you have. A lot of these times, these are one-liners that can just be automated. You can have GitHub or whatever push to some endpoint that just kicks off your one-liner. You can grep your logs and
you
display
could say,
what you need.
A minified JavaScript is a one-liner.
The main sort of focus of that is to really ask questions as to why you're using something and really understand what you're using. A lot of people say you need to know something two layers below to really have the justification and right to use that tool.
I've heard that said a lot. Yeah, two layers. I don't know.
Two layers below, whatever that means to certain people. People always laugh at me for doing the zero tech. It's like, so, hey, when are you going to, you know, get the ore from the ground and then, yeah, you know, melt the sand. Exactly. So it's hilarious. Yeah. I said two levels, not 10. All right.
Yeah. I've heard you say that, like, maybe like forget the frameworks. But how do you feel about companies developing their own framework and releasing that as an open source tool? I mean, Facebook with React talked about JavaScript. How do you feel about that approach? Maybe cultivating your own framework for your own use case and then seeing if it's useful publicly.
Well, I don't even think that cultivating your own framework is the best idea. Mm-hmm. I've sort of subscribed to look at something that's outside of the library tool or framework, and that's to look at example code and to make sure that whatever example code is kind of, you could, if you wanted to, copy paste it around. But what with good practices, what you want to do is to make sure that the conventions that you instill, big fan of conventions instead of tooling, is that they are pluggable, meaning that, for example, my BDD zero tech answer, where you can specify software by in a website, basically a web page, you can add the ability to drag and drop your next instructions into the instructions to set out a specification, or you can use an insert button on one of those fixtures. Mm-hmm. So if I'm happy with the insert button because that's good enough for me, I don't have to take the code that allows me to drag and drop. But if I do want that, I should be able to just plug in that piece of JavaScript code and it should work without changing the way the specifications are interpreted, etc. Mm-hmm. But so I'm looking after designing things and processes that way that are very pluggable, etc.
Order to have that sort of, I guess, something be as pluggable as that, you'd have to have a pretty good specification to begin with, or a pretty good understanding of what you're trying to accomplish to keep things modular enough, I guess.
Yeah, and that comes in with experience development, right? So people that have had experience, they can start to show how that's done. I think that's kind of missing from a lot of how people are learning these days. I think they're thrown into just learning a framework to become productive, and you look at the different boot camps, etc. They want, you know, the productivity to, hey, I can give a client something within a month that's complete. I think there's definitely, that's a trade-off. Obviously learning some of these other patterns and practices underneath is key. So it's a trade-off. There's only so much time you have if you want to get into, you know, this market in a short amount of time. And so Taking the shortcuts is at a price, right? So
definitely, I think looking at different client expectations, for example, or company expectations on their employees as well, has to be considered. If we look at companies that are doing, you know, research into new technology, and like let's say universities, they often work on maybe four year grants. So they can't really do something that takes 10 years or 15 or 20 years because they have to produce within that amount of time. And same thing, I think, when you're looking at websites, you know, I've got a web app. It needs to be up and running in the next 3 months. You've only got a certain amount of time to get things done. So how applicable are these sorts of ideas to these sort of projects?
So it's also the maturity of the business and how well it understands the technologist's craft. So it's getting better and better as more companies intrinsically have more software in them. Mm-hmm. And basically it's a trade-off. If you want to save money by having a bunch of junior people, maybe 6 or 10, and then you're going to have a bunch of people just trying to get a website out in, like you said, 5-6 months, or you could take that money and hire, you know, 3 experts that have, you know, 10,000 hours of flight time in developing systems with a web front end. Don't call it like a web page anymore. Call it a system with some UI aspects to it, and, you know, develop it as a proper system. Mm-hmm. Then, yeah, you could probably do that in, you know, 1 month or two. That's in the end, you're going to spend around the same kind of money, but you're going to get a better product faster. So that's what kind of dovetails into Adaptec and why I started it, just to get the people that have that level of experience an umbrella to work under, to not be distracted by having to deal with, you know, the people that are maybe on the business side, maybe the politics of an organization, maybe the people that that are sort of the established curmudgeons that just are, don't move my cheese, and I've always done this in VB6, leave me alone, you're a threat to my career. Mm-hmm. So, you know, giving an umbrella for people that are wanting to work in, you know, more of the event-based type of systems, and you look at that with React, Flux, and Redux, and all these things. Those are actually things that have started in Facebook, and they're inspired by concepts like CQRS. So it's starting to get out there as a way of working and looking at things. It's a really good blog post, actually, I found by chance today about, you know, one guy not wanting to, why he gave up using MVC frameworks altogether entirely. I just tweeted it today, actually. So
we'll have a link down below to that tweet.
Yeah, it's actually, it's a very good article. It does get into some of the motivations as to, you know, why linking the data in the view to the underlying REST APIs has kind of pushed us down a road that doesn't fare so well for making a system, you know, to get something out the door very quickly. We lean on these MVC frameworks, but he's definitely pointing out some very good points about the dangers of that in terms of long term.
Well, how do you know? And is this is kind of interesting, making a system. It might sound more modular. It might sound like a better thing to start out with, but isn't that kind of although using an MVC framework is not really zero tech, but isn't that kind of an opposite? Let's start out with a bigger, more complex system that requires more upfront development, requires more upfront design, requires all these things, rather than just start with a bare minimum MVC Rails app. Even though it's not a bare minimum, but it is a bare minimum amount of work.
It's actually
under standard.
It's actually quite the opposite. So
okay.
What I found is that by concentrating on the logic of a system, you actually keep things a lot more simple than what people perceive as, hey, here's a ready-made MVC framework, fill in the blanks for your business logic and follow that. So one of the things that I've done, and in terms of having Adaptec as a consultancy that specializes in these things, is we've embraced something called event storming, which is a method of understanding a system very quickly with key people that are going to be involved in the project, such as all the way up to a CEO and all the way down to testers. And
how important is having these key people involved in the event storming session?
It's quite crucial, because what you're getting at the beginning of a project is the buy-in and understanding of what the building blocks and what terminology is going to be used for building that system. So event storming is sort of like brainstorming. It's intentionally called that. The term was coined by Alberto Brandolini from Italy, a very, very awesome guy that took what Greg Young did in his workflow modeling exercise for CQRS and gave it some kind of a branding and a bunch of steps to really make it easy to understand by more people. It's got a catchy name too. And essentially what you're doing there is creating, showing visually on sticky notes all the different events that happen on a timeline for your system to work. And once you get those are facts. And the key thing about that is that you're addressing two things. You're getting your transactional boundaries, i.e. what things stick together. A customer signed up, you know what data is in there. Maybe there's a Visa number, an email, et cetera. Mm. And you know that belongs together in that transaction. So having an event-centric view really gives you some interesting insights into how the system's supposed to operate technically, but without requiring people like CEOs and salespeople to understand that. They're doing this by accident. They don't even know how much they're contributing to writing the better system that's going to more fit, you know, the organization. A lot of people look at tech as a cost center in a business, where we have the opposite approach to really marry the two together and look at tech as an investment in the business, which is a total more positive way of looking at how tech plays in the way a business operates. And the closer that you can marry the two, the better. Then everyone's using the same terminology. And in those design sessions with the event storming, you know, at the end of the day, people are asking, well, what are we going to get out of this? And it's funny because it's not the actual result of that. Yeah, I'll get into what you get out of it. But during that time, the conversations between a guy that's the CEO, for example, in a service
person,
and a customer service rep, they might actually argue about having about whether there's a credit card required on sign up, right? And there may be a very good reason to have that credit card information on sign up if you're the customer service rep, because it makes it easy for you to then give a refund or whatever, or something went wrong. Maybe there's a valid reason for the customer service rep to have that. But the CEO might say, well, there's no way we're going to have that because our business model has to focus on acquiring users right now, and you're going to scare a percentage of them off. And so those kinds of conversations are the big benefit when you have those workflows done in a technology agnostic way that actually has some bearing, but you have these guys or girls arguing about why this is a good thing or a bad thing at the start of the project, not 6 months down the road when it's going to be hard to change.
I think it's pretty obvious to anyone who's worked in technology that a lot of things in the business organization, the structure, the hierarchical structure, whatever, actually affect the quality of code that gets written and gets produced, and how it gets produced, and even the mentality of the developers as far as whether they feel they have enough time to produce quality code or not, or if they're working with people who are doing proper code review or not, things like this. So what I've seen anyway, going out to the event storming sessions and then implementing them back in the office as well, is that these event storming sessions, they do draw out, you know, the people. If you can get everybody in the room that's important, that you want in that room, that has a say in this, or, which is pretty much in a smaller company, everyone. If you can get everyone in there and you have those conversations and you have that brainstorming or event storming session, and it takes an hour, it takes 2 hours, it takes 3 hours, that's your clarification of pretty much everything. That's your specification for what you're building out. You can then go with proceed with a fair amount of confidence that what you're building out, you have these events, you've had those conversations, and it sounds great. Now, here's a question. I'm not sure if you have a good answer for it. Who should be the person responsible or people responsible for, and how do you go about implementing this with projects?
So who's going to kick off the project, right? It depends on where the mindshare is of certain approaches. So there's there's different layers that you can go through with an event storming session. I mean, event storming comes from CQRS and event sourcing.
Could you tell us a little bit more, just a bit of a breakdown of what is CQRS exactly?
So CQRS is dividing up a system into two sides to make certain things a lot easier to deal with. And that big division is between things that affect state, so the write side, or OLTP if you're old.
if you're OLD.
yeah. So OLTP versus OLAP, so your read side. So read and writes are separated into systems specifically on purpose. And one of those reasons is the source of most bugs and problems are the writes to the system, where you accidentally write the wrong information because the validation wasn't 100% or whatever the reasons, maybe side effects. Mm-hmm. So when you take a system and say that I only have one side of this that's going to take in commands, and these either succeed or fail, and that's the way that state is preserved, but I'm also going to forbid you for reading that state. I'm going to rely on something in the background to publish events and populate different models where you'll be only able to query those to populate screens, etc. It's also called a circular architecture, but making these one-way streets simplifies a lot of things. For example, if you go all the way through to the event-centric model, you can specify something quite easily. You can say, given that an event that someone signed up to this hotel and that this person then has registered a credit card, and then that this person books, so then when, and you're given when the person tries to book a room, then you have an event a room has been booked, and that actually is what's stored. So these specifications now don't really have for the state transitions. They don't have anything that has anything to do with the UI, etc. And they're quite black and white. You can have most validation and other things very easily scripted and given when then format, and it's very technology agnostic, and it's a very clear indication of your success criteria. When you're done, you know that this event is stored. How you display that information, all this other stuff is secondary. That's a different problem. So you've got a very interesting case of dividing up your architecture to where you can get to a certain level of being complete without, and in a parallel way. So
if I were to, really overly simplify what you just said, CQRS is a way of breaking up or designing a system into two parts. One part where you're going to be writing or publishing events, and the other side where you're going to be reading or reading from the event store.
You're going to be reading, well, you can, that's an interesting caveat. There's a post that I did on cheating with CQRS, and yes, you can read the event store directly, but mostly it's a pub-sub system that enables quite a lot of this parallelism, and any kind of transaction changes are published as events to a read side that then gets updated. And so when you want to display current users online, it's just reading a table that in behind the scenes is getting updated by these events. And so for the front end, all you're doing is looking at one table. This PubSub sort of architecture in behind the scenes makes it really easy to develop multiple screens in parallel, et cetera. So there's plenty of advantages. The other big advantage is that, as I said in the beginning, the number of bugs that are present from state transitions is tremendous. However, systems are mostly read. If you look at the typical line of business applications, you're doing a lot of queries to populate screens as people are navigating the site. There's only very few moments in time when they're actually changing the state of anything.
So this ties in quite well with the DDD CQRS ES practitioners meetup.
Yes.
And this is something that you and some other members of AdaptTech run, Robert Reppel as well.
Yeah.
And I guess this is a really good place to get. So I've been there. James has been there a couple of times. It's a really good place to get some familiarity, to even bring by your own idea and do some event storming and kind of get into it. It's a good place. It's kind of like a weekly dojo where you can go and kind of work on stuff. Now, obviously, there is the other side where you are working for Adapt, or you have a company, you're running AdaptTech Solutions, and you do provide these services. You can go into companies do event storming sessions and help to bring them. And you actually helped our company out with some of this as well. It's been quite helpful for us. So there is that side. But what about other things, other literature? People are interested in CQRS, in event storming or event sourcing, in DDD. What are some good what's some good literature, some good places to look for references?
So there's a reason that Greg Young hasn't written a book yet. He said it's going to be published in 2036, event-centric architecture. And the reason for that is that it's a changing practice because it's still new. However, there's been some solid foundations already laid down. But I'd just like to rewind back to the meetup, though, because you did bring it up. And in terms of being, it's every week, which is crazy, but there's enough people to actually have it going every week, and that's wonderful. So one of the problems that we're having is that we're getting people from all walks of life going in there, including people that, like you said, want to find out for the first time what this is, versus people already trying this. They may be using it in an open source project or something like that. And then there's people that are in a company that has adopted all event sourcing, et cetera, all together. So you have
that's kind of perfect because I can't imagine a company where you're going to have everybody in the company.
Well, they exist. Believe it or not, there's already a few. Well, not everyone is an expert, but there's companies already that are fully on board, especially with heavy accounting side and financial circles. For sure, there's definitely at least aspects of CQRS and event sourcing in those companies anyway. So those people are wanting to get more out of this meetup to go and explore some of the mesh type of stuff and you know, merging event streams and all sorts of different aspects that are a little bit more advanced. So we're getting all three groups of people together. So we're thinking actually is having a different schedule where, you know, the first Thursday of the month we'll do the beginners one, and then the next one will be the intermediate with some topics,
and then
the advanced one is in the third one, and then just a general one in the fourth one, which I forget whether you sometimes get 3, 4, 5 Thursdays in the in a month, but whichever way that falls on. So you know, we'll probably do things that way. See how that goes in the fall. Even though it's summer, we're still getting a lot of people coming in. So I think we've had our slowest day was 6 people showing up, but they were all wanting to, you know, continue to learn and find out how the code works and.
It's a pretty awesome meetup. I think quote unquote meetup because, you know, meetups are so different. Some meetups you go there, there's a person presenting. Some meetups you go there.
Oh, we've had presentations too.
You get a workshop, whatever. But this one, what I find is, you know, you get that, well, you often have like a fireside chat sort of thing. You have a presentation. Mm-hmm. So you get like, here's some pretty interesting knowledge bestowed on you. And then there's the hands-on, let's work through this. Yeah. You're actually getting that practice.
A lot of times we start off with an event storming exercise. So everyone can kind of, there's enough room with a nice big table and walls, et cetera. Ooh. So you can do that exercise of event storming and see how that goes. But yeah.
Okay. So tell us a little bit more about Adaptec Solutions, why you decided to embark on this journey to run a consultancy, I guess, and how that's going. And then also about a couple of your other meetups.
Sure. So I started Adaptec, I sort of mentioned this earlier, for allowing companies to leverage a level of expertise because they don't have the time, given their pressures, business pressures, to hire up and educate people in something like Securus and DDD and ES. Their technology leaders in the organization want to do that, but the avenue to get there is quite lengthy given the few people that are out there that have enough experience to guide things smoothly. So what we're doing is we're gathering those people in one place and being able to have a long tail of support and education as well so that it actually is something that's adopted properly within the organization. So let's say you have a website that you need to build for a business or there's a product or a system. We typically engage with you for a day to do an event storming session and really show explicitly what the workflows are in what you want to build and what everyone believes the system should be. And that, again, just repeating what I said earlier, that is a very technology agnostic exercise where we have every single person in the company that's going to have some sort of say and interaction with the system. So that's great. We start off with that. It's usually myself, Robert, and maybe one of our other consultants, depending on the size of the project. It might just be me for a small one, and or Robert or one of the other guys. So Well, they are. We've just put on contract our first woman. So you know, we're 25%. Well, we're ahead of the curve.
Yeah. I was going to say, our past guest Parveen Kaler, he mentioned that he has this service almost like a CTO for hire.
Yes.
And when we first talked or when we first met, you mentioned that you were helping this company in sort of that capacity. Is that sort of a service that Adaptec offers?
Looking on the radar out front. But yes, I'm looking. I am a CTO. For hire, and so I'm doing that for a couple of companies at least, maybe three now, and an advisory role in a couple of others. But the goal is to actually have a set of companies that are leveraging event sourced things, just like you have VCs that have specific focus. Maybe they're into green companies, right? And they'll back a lot of companies that are doing a lot of,
or whatever.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what we're doing is we're doing that. This is probably next year. I'm doing this personally to start, but eventually the advisory board that's on Adaptec. If you go to the site, you can see the advisory board. There's quite a lot of people that have very good knowledge that's hard to find.
Who are some of the people you might find on the advisory board?
You'd find Greg Young there, Peter Hingens, Martin Suchanek, who's a very good guy here in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Quite a few. Charles Ilya Krumpo, who's the CTO of Coho.
Past guest.
Past guest. Yeah, he's an awesome guy. And we see eye to eye on a lot of stuff. So he's also an advisor. So we're looking at this advisory board to then actually be leveraged for a larger holding company that would, say, then have 14, 15 companies that are startups in Vancouver, but to allow them to leverage common requirements and have them open sourced and have them get something done for a quarter of the investment, because now there's four companies that need to, you know, do some specific component.
Oh, I see. That's like event pooling resources.
Absolutely. Pooling resources, cool. Pooling mind share, etc. But with a very heavy bent on the technology side, on the execution side, which is a lot of times missing. We get these kind of incubators or whatever that are very business focused, but or maybe at some shallower level, maybe they're all Ruby on Rails or whatever.
Right.
Who knows? But this is a little bit deeper on the architectural side. Because one of the things about this whole event source type of system, it follows a very nice OCP type of paradigm where you're open for extension but closed for
principle.
Open close principle, right? So for your architecture, which means you're avoiding the version one problem in your in your MVPs.
One of the things we also talked about before is that you want to help startups and new businesses avoid that version one rewrite.
That's right.
Yeah.
We basically do that. And I mean, you can see that already in our track record with a couple of companies. We turned around within 3 days without relying on things like Ruby on Rails to have an incredible system that has event sourcing built into it from the start. Mm-hmm. The guy's jaws just dropped on the ground. The CEO was like, wow, I can't believe this was done in 3 days. Mm-hmm. And these are lines of code that are production ready, fully automated specifications that will continue to be used as long as those events are used, right?
So sounds pretty interesting or pretty impressive. Yeah. So you're also doing with AdapTech, you're also doing recruiting.
Yeah, so there's four. When I started, there was four focus points, and we're still doing that, although we're concentrating right now on a lot of the consulting and outsourcing in a number of ways. However, yes, we do recruiting. So I've placed a few people earlier this year and looking to do more of that.
So are you only recruiting for places that are practicing CQRS and event storming?
No. Any decent...
That's too bad, because if somebody wanted to work in that field, you might be the person.
You
to
might
talk
hire
to.
Them, right?
No, it's definitely. I mean, I'm not gonna say no, but most likely I would like to have them work for me.
Yeah.
Exactly. We do that for just because being in the industry for so long, it's a lot better than most kind of recruiting companies that just kind of scrape LinkedIn profiles and bombard you with a number of resumes. I'd rather have my sort of Rolodex and a couple of the other guys' Rolodexes available for other companies. And those are, you know, personal connections from, you know, years ago and through meetups, through years and years of being involved in the community. Mm-hmm. And so they're not really cold contacts that you're getting. And yes, you know, you don't get 10 resumes from me, you'll get one, but that one's going to be
like a personal
almost
vouch.
Like a
right.
it would almost be like they've already gone through a screening process. So we have that advantage of knowing how companies work, and most of us have been pretty much in contact with the people working in most of the companies in Vancouver, or at least worked in some way with the people that may be at your company. So we have a very good idea directly.
It's interesting that it's a fairly small community here in Vancouver, yet it is kind of big. But I was talking with Charles about this as well. It's small enough that those who are involved in the community are heavily involved, and we all know each other.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting.
So we also do, should I finish the four things?
Sure.
So the recruiting is definitely another part. So education's another one. So we're doing a lot of things. There's an initiative to do a very big boot camp and other things like that. That's a virtual. It's not an on-site one. And obviously the education part also is, once we're on premise, that you have the ability to work with these guys that have all this awesome experience. People, right? Yeah, exactly. Well, right now it is guys, unfortunately. So, it will be people.
You're on the right track to diversify your.
We're 25% right now. So this is good. But the actual technical people that are there, unfortunately, are right now guys.
I was going to say, I know you have another service which I've heard Robert talk about, which is taking a legacy app, converting it for events, and then actually using that sort of as a stepping stone to refactor into this newer system, which has these little components that you could swap in and out as time moves on, versus maintain this monolith of legacy app,
right? Yeah. So we're in the middle of redoing an entire website, because there's so many things that you're bringing up that I just didn't have the first one that I put together last year when we kicked off.
Link to the show.
Exactly. Anyway, so that's exactly right. So if anyone's read Michael Feather's book, famous book, Working Effectively with Legacy Code, it's about the valiant efforts of refactoring a monolith and some of the anti-patterns that are in it. So what we do, and this was mostly Robert's work at PayByPhone, was to find ways to actually freeze the legacy code, yet not freeze development of features based on your, we like to call it legacy investment, a much more positive spin on legacy code, because it is producing value. If it really was crap and had no value, you would have trashed it a long time ago. So a better name for it is legacy investment. Now, how to deal with that? You know, if you read Michael Feather's book, it's about molding that into a more workable solution so that you're not breaking things when you're adding new features, etc. However, the reality in most places that have tremendous problems with legacy is that it's a moving target. There's new bug fixes going in, etc. So these refactoring efforts are always hampered and always behind. You end up getting refactoring work rolled back because some person that knew some system in a certain state can only fix that bug when that code looks like that. So it gets reverted. You get a lot of people stepping on each other's toes, etc. So the approach is to freeze the legacy, source events from it for truth, for additional information, and then get a system outside that's subscribing to those events to fulfill the new functionality.
Mm-hmm. And that's Robert actually gave a really good talk on that at one of the fireside chats at the DDD CRCS practitioners.
So it's definitely within like the event-centric way of working. Mm-hmm. And so we do offer that if you have legacy investment. I mean, we have these tiers. We have the startup one. We even have a fixed price package for a startup. So for a sum of money, it's something that's not going to continue to be billed by every day. You get an entire system.
The startup package. Yeah, we'll definitely have a link to that page as well.
Yeah.
We're kind of starting to run out of time, which is unfortunate because there are so many other things I wanted to talk to you about.
Well, the other meetups
are...
Our time together at Active State,
GitHelp and ZeroSec, which we talk about every week, and the Show Me Your Desktop, the Linux meetup.
Yeah.
So we do definitely bring that up. We'll have to have you on again sometime. But for people who are listening who want to get a hold of you, what's a good place to reach out to you? Are you in any of the local Slack channels, maybe Twitter?
Yeah, I'm on the United Slack channels between VanTech, Vancouver Technology, and YVR Dev. I think it's a mainstream one.
VanTech, Vancouver Tech, and YVR Dev.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So there's the
The United channel also has the Open Data BC.
That's right, Open Data BC and a few others.
Writing software.
That's right. That's right. So you can find me on Slack there on VanTech, I believe, which is the one that Charles started for a lot of the data science stuff. So there's a lot of channels there about data science and AI, et cetera, kind of a more scientific bent. But we do have channels there, obviously, for, JavaScript, C#,
everything.
just like any other. So it's a good place to get a hold of me. Of course, you can just get a hold of me by going to adaptixsolutions.ca. There's a contact me button there on Twitter, Dimitric on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. I kind of keep Facebook for private stuff, so not there, but anything else. It's too bad we have ran out of time.
And of course, all your meetups as well.
Yeah, the meetup. Yeah. So yeah, on Mondays is the GitHelp and ZeroTech. So ZeroTech is a way, what we mentioned earlier, to how do we throw away all these things that we take as a given for CI or for MVC or for whatever, and how do we do these things from scratch? And so we can start working on these things and understanding them. And part of the problem with the industry today is we get so many dogmatic ways of working, and what we need is a baseline to just actually count how much effort there is in getting something like continuous deployment and continuous integration stuff set up. And a lot of times it's like nothing. It's like why are we taking on all of this total cost of ownership in these giant frameworks and tools? We're only using up 1% of them, but we've introduced millions of lines of code that could potentially be security breaches or whatever.
The surface
right?
area.
Surface, and it's way just bigger. Way exactly and way more things to maintain. So part of that also is the Git. Aspect. Git is, a lot of problems to a lot of people very, very quickly because it's a command line based thing, but it's actually very powerful. And like anything powerful, it needs time to be studied and used properly. But when you do, it's amazing what kind of things are possible. So I started this a long, long time ago, and the GitHelp has always had a trickle of interesting people come through that want to have some sort of help, or maybe even help out, or have a place to sound out their work, get their their Git workflow for at their company. Do we use submodules? Do we use subtree? Do we not? Do we vendorize? All these scary topics we can go over and see the advantages, etc. Mm-hmm. So that's on Mondays from 4 to 6, and then on Wednesdays from 4:30 to 6:30 is the Linux desktop meetup. Mm-hmm.
And we talk about these every week, and we actually attend them quite a bit as well. I haven't attended the Linux one, but I have attended the Monday, and of course the Thursday. We talked a lot about that, the ES, DDD, CQRS, ES practitioners. Hope to see you at some of them, and thanks so much for being on, Adam.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Sameroom for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups around town.